This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Current time is 6:04, and you are tuned in here to WRFL Lexington. My name is Grant, and I will be with you here all the way up until 8 p.m. Mitch is not with us this week, but otherwise, Tech Talks will still be going on. So feel free to reach out to me over on Facebook. We can have a chat. That's facebook.com/WRFL Tech Talks, TekTalks. Other than that, I'll be back in a minute with a couple of articles. And in the meantime, got some music queued up for you. We're back. The current time, 6:16, right on the nose here. And you were tuned in to WRFL Lexington. First story that we have up for tonight is a story about a company that I believe we've actually discussed before. This company is named Plastic, spelled without the I. And after raising $9 million through crowdfunding in 2014, so this has been a kind of a long-running thing. They raised $9 million through pre-orders. The whole goal of the Plastic card is that it's a digital card with a chip that would replace all of the cards in your wallet with one single card. And so there's a button on there so you can swap through the various cards you have. And it's got a little e-ink screen. And then the idea is that very infrequently you would have to recharge this card, and that it has all of the data and it can masquerade as any of your cards, so that rather than having to physically carry them, you can carry this one copy of all of them. So that's the idea. And this was introduced as a concept back in 2014. They raised $9 million through pre-orders, and since then, they've been looking to close on a separate $9 million in funding to get this up and running. And after failing to do that over the past year or so, they are down, all the way down. They have put up a statement on their website that all of their employees have been laid off, everything is being shuttered, all of their customer service, their social media, everything going away now. Which might not have been as bad of a deal, but the problem is that they haven't issued refunds and have no intention to create the Plastic card. And so they're off into the void and have yet to issue returns. So it produces kind of an issue, and it's something that we've talked about from time to time here, that intrinsically, any time you participate in a Kickstarter, there is, any time you participate in any form of group fundraising, there is always that risk that it doesn't pan out. And very rarely does it fail on the magnitude of something that's so high profile as the Plastic card, but it can. And this actually, I feel like, kind of harkens back to a conversation we had only a week or two ago, where Mitch and I were discussing this same kind of concept idea, but with video games. A lot of them are interested in having pre-orders now rather than having you just buy the game after it's already out. You know, maybe there's a discount or a deal or whatever. But the big deal here is that they are looking to file Chapter 7, and as far as I can tell, they're not going to pay back their almost a million debtors. I guess you can think of it that way. You know, if you raise all of this money through crowdfunding, they have tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of debtors now. And so where do they go from here? This is kind of an issue. So I don't really know. But there's certainly been a lot of problems in this industry, because this isn't the first time that we've seen this idea come up of a digital card to replace Mini, but it has had a lot of issues overall. And the first one that tried to launch was back in 2013, and it was called Coin, and they actually shipped their cards. They went out into the world in 2015, and then in 2016 they got bought by Fitbit and discontinued. And so then the year after that, when Coin came out, was Plastic in 2014. Tried to ship in 2016, never made it out the door. And then after that, in 2015, another card called Swipe tried to launch. They sent out a small test batch last summer, and they're no longer making their original model because it didn't have the EMV chip in it. And so in looking and trying to incorporate that, they're now having to reconfigure their stuff, you know? So there's kind of been this point at which the technology caught up and it would be feasible to do this. And then in that same window when it became technologically possible to have a card computer that small that it would fit on the size of an index card, they immediately got trampled by the changeover to the EMV system, and so retooling all of their stuff to handle that has been expensive, no doubt, and caused a lot of problems for this industry. So it's kind of a weird set of circumstances that have led to so many of these different companies having issues, but this is by far the most high profile of these issues. And with that, I'm going to take a break and come back here in a minute. Welcome back. The current time is 6:29, and you were tuned in here to WRFL Lexington. Next up, the article that I wanted to get to was something that we actually talked about first a couple of weeks ago. The blackest black pigment as a paint pigment was developed earlier this year and was released largely as an announcement a couple of weeks ago, but no more than a month ago. And we first reported on this 2 or 3 weeks ago. But the pigment is known as Vantablack, and it's created using carbon nanotubes. Without going into too much the details of what we've discussed previously, there is one person who has the license to use Vantablack in art, and that has caused a lot of stir in the art industry. There's this big reveal that we have this new blackest, almost kind of optically inert black pigment, and it has a lot of interesting properties to it because it so effectively deceives the human eye because it's so black in color. And so there is an artist who has licensed the sole use of this black pigment for his art and his art alone. And a lot of the art community has become upset by this fact. And in response, in a matter of weeks, they have developed the pinkest pink color in the world. And as far as the purity of pink, it's kind of hard to measure because pink is kind of an obtuse color. It's not really part of the rainbow. It has a lot of interesting properties to it in that sense. You know, you think about the rainbow, you think about the colors all the way through, starting with red, ending with violet, going through all the colors in between. Pink isn't in that spectrum, and really, if anything, pink is kind of a red-purple mix that isn't within the normal human spectrum. So it's got a lot of these, and I think that's part of why pink is so shocking to see. But the point to it, this, is that any artist in the world can buy their pink paint unless it is this same man with the license on the Vanta Black. And so it's equal parts a kind of political action against him and just a way of poking fun at this industry. But a lot of people genuinely are upset, and it's easy to understand why someone would be upset when you're being limited by what kind of materials and effects you can use within your art, if only just because someone won't give you the license to it. That seems kind of goofy. I mean, you know, in theory, and this is taking it to an extreme, but you could get the sole license for color of paint from someone, I don't know, whoever it is that makes lots of paint, and prevent other people from using that color, but it's kind of goofy, really. If you extend it to anything beyond this black, it immediately seems ridiculous. And so the community has said, if you'll relinquish your sole ownership of this black paint, then we'll in turn turn over to you the pink paint, called pink. But it's just kind of interesting to see this whole story that I didn't know about originally, that hadn't really surfaced originally, that has this artistic backlash to it. And so I found that interesting, and I'm going to be linking to that over on our Facebook page. That all is happening over at WRFL Tech Talks. That's TEKTALKS here on Facebook. So you can keep up with me there. In the meantime, I'm going to post that article here in a minute. Next up, another thing I wanted to talk about, and this is something that we had mentioned in passing that might be happening, but now it is fact, it is known, it is happening. Multi-user voice recognition has arrived for the Google Home starting today, starting this afternoon. You can, if you have Google Home, you can update your app. You can then link it specifically to your account, because previously you would have to use one account that would be shared by all members of the family. This was for calendar events or anything else you would do. They would only get linked to one account. But now you can train it on your voice, and it will then recognize your voice and use that to associate it with the details of your account, your calendar, your day, all of that kind of stuff, all happening now, not just by recognizing that someone is speaking, but specifically you. So that's something that has been speculated about and has some interesting conversation around it, but that's the details. As of this afternoon, if you have a Google Home, it can now understand the individual voices of your household. We're going to take a break here for a minute. Current time is 6:52, and you were tuned in here to WRFL Lexington. First off, that last track that you just heard was The Wasted by Sundog. Then back before that was Lose Yourself to Dance by Daft Punk. Got a couple more things coming your way, but first, a little bit of news. First up on the docket, leading us into 7 o'clock, Tesla has participated in a voluntary recall that affects 53,000 of the 76,000 vehicles, so about three-quarters of the cars they made in 2016. And it's not something that is life-threatening or substantially complex. It's an issue with the parking brake that would cause the vehicle to be locked into park effectively. So if you take it down to your dealership or you arrange for getting your car checked out, they expect that it shouldn't take more than 45 minutes and that only around 1 out of 20 cars is actually going to have that defective component. So far there's been no injuries or accidents caused by it, and they don't expect that there necessarily will be, but it is still something to get fixed if you have. have a Tesla, or if you know someone who has a Tesla, or if you just like staying up to date on recall news, there it is. Next up, Apple has set a rather large goal, I guess you could say. As of right now, 96% of Apple's facilities use renewable energy, but Apple continues to aim upward in where they want to go for environmental responsibility. The next thing that they want to go after is that they want to start making all of their gadgets with recycled materials and eventually want to transition to using only recycled materials. They're hoping to have a supply chain that they want to make closed loop. They've already taken the first step towards this in that old iPhones can be taken back to Apple and they will be disassembled and scrapped piece by piece. And they have this really elegant machine that pulls apart old iPhones and disassembles them very carefully so that all the parts that are in there that are still useful can be reused in a meaningful way rather than, you know, just junking the phone. And so where they go from here, it's hard to say, but their goal is to minimize the amount of new materials that is needed in their manufacturing process so that they can eventually not have to use mining for the resources for all of their products. It is a big goal, and Apple readily admits that they're not really sure how to move towards that 100% mark, which is understandable, but it is interesting to see them set this as a goal, even if they can't quite make that leap yet. They do have quite of a conservation streak in them, and they have done quite a lot to save energy and resources where they can. But I'm interested to see where this next step for Apple goes. Other than that, I'm going to take another break. Current time is 7:16 and you were tuned in here to WRFL Lexington. My name is Grant. I'll be with you here up until 8 p.m., but this is going to be the last segment of the night for Tech Talks. Mitch is out this week, so it's just me bringing you that weekly news, everything happening in science and technology every Thursday here on WRFL Lexington. Like I said, I'm going to be here until 8, but I wanted to go ahead and kind of wrap up the stories for the night. First thing I wanted to get to is that the Lyrid meteor shower is currently ongoing and will be peaking this weekend. It'll be at its visual maximum, as many as 20 each hour during the night. And so the International Meteor Organization said that it will peak around noon on the East Coast on Saturday. And since they're hard to see in daylight, of course, the suggestion is that you go out in the dark hours early, right before sunrise, Saturday or Sunday, if you want to get a good view. And so that's a pretty good pace. It's not as strong as some of the meteor showers that happen later in the year, in the fall, but it is still something that will be visible and is worth seeing if you want to get up early or stay up late to see them. You certainly will be able to. So that is what is new with that. The Naval Observatory says that they're going to have a magnitude of about a 4.6 or 4.7 on their scale, and that Venus is also going to be up in the night on Saturday, pretty visible, low and large. So it should be a good night for seeing them if you want to. Other than that, the last article that I wanted to get around to for tonight is something that I'm sure we'll end up talking about next week with Mitch. But just to give you a little feel of where we're at, Bose is in trouble this week getting into a lawsuit after a group, class action group, has accused Bose of listening in on the music that gets played over their wireless headphones and selling that data in turn to advertising companies. And so privacy groups and customers are upset, of course, that they weren't drawn out in the terms of the contract very clearly. That fact that they were going to be using their musical information, of course, when you use your phone and you link it up and you're transmitting information to your headphones, it's very easy to scrape that information for what songs you're playing or what podcast you're listening to or that kind of stuff. And that's what people are upset about, is that they're scraping this data and then in turn selling this information out to advertisers. And it's shaping up to be a fairly big, fairly nuanced suit. It probably looks like something that I'm sure we'll talk about next week when Mitch is back in, and I'm sure we'll be talking about when it comes through this summer. But in the meantime, keep it locked all the way to the left here at WRFL Lexington. I'm done for tonight, so thank you for joining me here on your only alternative left.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.